Welcome back for the second hour of Issues, Etc. Pastor Matt Harrison joins us here for a few minutes, and then we have audio open lines. I was just this afternoon looking through N.T. Wright's new book that it deals with the problem of evil in the world, and he dedicates the book to those who died in New York on September 11th, 2001, those who died near the Indian Ocean in December 2004, those who died in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, August 2005, and in Pakistan, Kashmir, October 2005. That's a short list of natural disasters, not to mention the man-made disasters that seem to pile up on the news weekly. And we hear about them instantly, and they all create a tidal wave, if you will, of opportunity and human need. We're going to be talking about God's mercy and the victims of natural and man-made tragedies. Pastor Matt Harrison is our guest, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief. And this Sunday is LCMS World Relief and Human Care Sunday. Matt, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. It's been too long.
It has been too long. You have been taking advantage of what 200 years ago would have been thought of as a miracle. You can actually get on a plane at a pretty short notice and go to the location of a natural disaster, assess the need and all of those kind of things. 200 years ago, that was not possible. You might not even have known that the event had taken place or that there were victims in need. It sounds like we are living in an age of unprecedented opportunity to reach out with that touch of mercy.
Yeah, it is. It's an unprecedented era. And I'm just, as you raise the question, you know, I've hardly even thought about it. We just simply do it. You know, there are all kinds of domestic disasters we respond to, and we can have people on the ground within hours. And we do that all the time. And it's an incredible thing to be able to go on site. We had LCMS Lutheran people in Hawaii affected by the recent quakes and problems in Hawaii. And within hours, we were in contact with those folks, knew exactly what their needs were, had thorough conversations with their pastors, and were right on top of it. It would have been impossible just a short time ago. And it also, it brings a higher level of accountability, particularly with email. Because, for instance, if a donor gives a significant gift for a specific purpose, nationally or internationally, in many cases that donor is in contact with the recipient via email. And so it's a challenging thing in many respects, but it also, this hyper-communication brings a higher level of accountability.
So talk about the scope, not so much in terms of the tragedies themselves, but the scope of the work that a relief agency like LCMS World Relief is called upon to undertake in the course of a typical year, although I know that no year is going to be typical.
Wow. Last year we received about $12 million or so for disaster last fiscal year, most of that Katrina money. We spent an enormous amount of time working on Katrina, as you can well imagine and certainly know. Meanwhile, a number of projects were ongoing from tsunami. Meanwhile, you have any number of domestic disasters that are occurring all over the place. Relationships are going on with organizations and service providers that we deal with, partners all over the United States and really all over the world. At the same time, we've got all the ongoing efforts in Africa, in Latvia, in Lithuania, in Eastern Europe, in Russia, pro-life programs in Russia, and India and Sri Lanka. Just it's an amazing proposition to keep it all moving, but somehow the Lord grants us the ability to do so.
We had Sally Henriksen in studio last week sometime. She had just come back, as you well know, after doing a mercy medical trip to Kenya, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And here's a team of several doctors who see something like 1,000 people, most of them in Kibera slum in Nairobi, and treat upwards of 1,000 people, every one of them paying a few cents for the privilege, which is sort of a matter of principle and dignity, and it's an amazing thing.
She talked about the people coming in droves to this church that had been turned into a makeshift clinic. She talked about the nature of their maladies, and after hearing her talk about that, I thought to myself, but it seems just, you go over there, spend a couple weeks, it's a drop in the bucket. It is a black hole of need, and that's just Kenya.
It is. I think there are two things that come to mind when you say that. The first is, it's not a black hole for that one person who gets helped. And the mandate of our Lord to reach out with love and mercy, both word and deed, word of the gospel, and care for the body, is not to solve the world's problems, but to reach out as the Lord gives us strength and ability, one person at a time. And look, I saw a young man last spring. I was visiting an orphanage that we were able to build in western Kenya. And I was walking around the site, a place where about 15 boys had lived in a horrid little mud hut of substandard for their own culture. And some of these boys had been there 8-9 years. And we were able to fund for $35,000 a beautiful orphanage with 3 buildings, a wonderful dormitory. They showed me around the new premises right next to Othoro Lutheran Church. By the time we got to their new dormitory with metal beds built by the trade school of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Kenya, we were all in tears. And I asked one boy what he thought, and he said to me something more profound than I've ever heard anybody else on earth say. And I've been in the presence of the President of the United States on more than one occasion, and many dignitaries all over the world. This boy said to me, "I thank God and Jesus Christ that someone has regarded us as human beings." And hearing that, even as I speak it now, that propels me to work as hard as I possibly can for this cause, because Christ regards people as human beings, and he gives us the privilege and pleasure of doing the same, and it's fantastic work.
You said something at the very beginning of those comments, Matt, that I want to come back to, that you do not, that LCMS World Relief, the other relief agencies, of course, who also pitch in, it isn't, the goal is not to solve these problems, but to simply help real people on the ground. We don't have to undertake massive deeds to somehow turn the whole thing around, but focus upon the individual.
Well, I think there are massive relief and aid agencies wrestling with these huge conundrums. And the problems of poverty and the difficulties of the developing world in some ways just continue to plague us. The poor ye shall always have with you. It is important for governments and others, secular and faith-based, to have organizations that have mega and audacious goals. For us, we're interested in really, and this is our forte, strengthening local, faithful Lutheran communities to care for people in their midst and around them. And in many respects, we're virtually the only ones in the world who are able and willing to do this work. And so a lot of what happens, we might bring immediate relief or medical aid to a community, but what we're interested in at the same time is making sure that local Lutheran community has education, doctors being trained, nurses, administrators, etc. And so every project which we do and are doing has to have an educational component to increase the capacity of local people to deal with their issues, and they can deal with them.
And those local congregations, they are already about the business of doing what they've been put there to do, namely to minister to people where they're at with God's word and sacraments. Talk about the necessity of that going hand in hand with meeting people's daily needs.
Well, in in my view, this kind of Christian and Lutheran work, really, without the gospel, could be done by virtually anybody. And there's nothing wrong with that kind of work. Is everything right with a left-hand kingdom kind of good citizenship? Everything right with you joining hands with your neighbors in a community to better a situation? What the church does specifically, as it reaches out to its community, it speaks the gospel. What profit a man if he gain the whole world yet loses his soul? We're animated by the conviction that there is no salvation outside of Christ and faith in his cross. And if that is our conviction, that will animate, that will inform everything we do. Now, we don't care for people in order to evangelize. We care for people because it's who we are in Christ. We care for people because they are made in God's own image, and each and every individual is worth the blood of Jesus. When Jesus sends out his disciples, he sends them out, according to Luke's gospel, to preach and to heal. And I believe that both are sort of eschatological. The kingdom is preached. A kingdom comes in the preaching. The evidence of the kingdom also comes when people are cared for. And we see this throughout the history. We see it in the New Testament, and we see it throughout the history of the early church at its missiological best.
Briefly here, as our time winds down, give us a list of four or five projects, just a list of them, that LCMS World Relief is currently working on.
Oh, we got a great project going in Palanga, Lithuania. The building of a church and a social ministry outreach center in this town on the coast. It's probably the first new Lutheran church built in 75 or 100 years in Lithuania. And it's in the town of Palanga that attracts a million visitors every year for the holidays. And it's just fantastic. We've got a series of clinics which we are assisting and building. Right now, we're moving forward on the building. We have the dollars in hand for it to build a medical clinic, which will become a hospital that will sit at Living Waters Lutheran Church in Kibera slums, one of the largest slums in the entire world. That's where Sally was with the crew and helping all those folks. We've got 100 other projects that we could talk about, and a ton of domestic things going on. It's endless, and the Lord blesses each and every one of them.
This Sunday is LCMS World Relief and Human Care Sunday. What's this Sunday really all about? Give us the bottom line.
The bottom line is this. The Lord has blessed us, particularly in America and in the American Lutheran Church, with fabulous wealth. We're gifted with a pure word. We know the gospel very clearly. And it's about recognizing that there are people, many of them fellow Christians and fellow Lutherans even, but especially those outside the church all over the world, that desperately need the love of Christ in word and deed. And I tell you, the opportunity to travel overseas has really hit me in this sense. It has shown me how absolutely wealthy we are by comparison. It is astounding. And with a slight bit of our generosity, a pittance, so much good can be done elsewhere. And the beautiful thing is people keep giving, and they give, and they give, and they give, and the Lord blesses. It's a great trust to have this leadership of LCMS World Relief, and I want to hold this in trust until I set it down and the next person or persons take it up and carry it on. The Lord will bless.
Folks, if you're a member of a Lutheran congregation of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod this Sunday, you're probably going to see an envelope. You should look for it for LCMS World Relief. Remember the need that is out there. You can also donate online. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. The LCMS World Relief logo is right there on our homepage, issuesetc.org. You can also call them toll-free and donate directly. It's 1-888-930-4438. They can take your donation right now, 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief, concerned with both body and soul. Pastor Matt Harrison is Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, and this Sunday is LCMS World Relief and Human Care Sunday. Matt, it's always a pleasure, and it is good to talk to you at long last. Thanks for being our guest.
You bet. It's always a pleasure, Todd. Let's get together real soon, okay?
Yes, yes. Matt and I happen to go to the same church, but he travels, I travel, ergo, we never see each other. It's amazing. Of course, it's also a big church. You can get lost there. Audio Open Lines will round out this hour of Issues, etc. We haven't done much on the elections. We talked a lot about the elections before and during, but afterwards, we haven't done much. Not this week. There's a CNN story on evangelicals and the midterm elections. Everyone is recalculating. That's what's happening here. You go into an election thinking you know what's what. You think you know what's going to happen, and then when it happens, you step back, everybody looks at the polls, everybody looks at all the data, and they start to say, what really did happen? No one argues that the evangelical voter was a significant factor in this last election. The question is, how, and how will that evangelical voter be a factor in the next election? That's what everybody's trying to figure out. Now, you've had more than a week to think about the midterm elections. I'd like your analysis. What do you think really happened? I mean, we know how the votes came out, but what do you think was going on, and why do you think what happened happened? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can email us with your thoughts, comments, questions right here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's Audio Open Lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or issuesetc@kfuo.org. And then after we hear this, as time permits, there's a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly roundtable discussion on religion in the midterm election. Some very interesting thoughts on that particular subject. Let's go first to the CNN story, a brief post-election analysis of the midterm elections and what evangelicals had to do with all of it.
Well, some 70 million Americans call themselves evangelical Christians, and many may be heading to church this morning firm in their faith. But after a series of demoralizing events, what will happen to the political agenda of this powerful block of voters? Ron Claiborne takes a look now. Ron?
Bill, the election results seem to have opened up a debate among some evangelists as to what to do next. Stick with a Republican Party that is out of power in Congress and which some suggest hasn't fulfilled its promises to them, or see if the Democrats have a home for them. Some have even suggested take a break from active political involvement.
For many Christian evangelists, it was a disaster. Democrats taking control of Congress, Republicans, their political allies, going down in flames. There was more, an initiative to restrict abortion defeated in South Dakota, a measure to promote stem cell research approved in Missouri, an amendment to ban gay marriage defeated in Arizona. And just days before the election, the shocking revelation that evangelical leader Ted Haggard had consorted with a male prostitute. Christian evangelists still voted Republican by a 2-to-1 margin, but there were defections. Gary Palafis of suburban Chicago traditionally votes Republican. This time he voted for several Democratic candidates, too.
I could see myself voting for a Democratic president, you know, being if they have the integrity and character traits that I'm looking for as a voter or just a citizen of this country.
The election showed that evangelicals will go whichever way their conscience tells them to go.
David Kuo, a former official with the White House Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, says it's time to acknowledge that Republicans have failed to deliver on key social issues.
A lot of these major Christian leaders have sold out Jesus to politics and are now looking back and saying, oh my gosh, what have we gotten for the trade?
Some Christian political activists actually see a silver lining in the emergence of socially conservative Democrats, like Bob Casey, who was elected to the Senate in Pennsylvania, and Heath Schuller, an anti-abortion evangelical, elected to Congress in North Carolina.
The candidates that did well were more moderate, pro-life, and in some cases pro-marriage candidates. That's an important lesson for both political parties.
Some evangelists have even suggested taking a break from politics. Not likely, says Ted Olson of the newspaper Christianity Today.
I think evangelicals have a view of their faith that says, I need to be engaged in the world. It would be really against their evangelical DNA to pull out of public life or to pull out of politics.
Last Tuesday was not a total loss for evangelists. Seven states did pass measures banning same-sex unions. As for so-called Christian values voters coming over to the Democratic side in the future, one evangelical activist told me they will look favorably on Democrats who share their views on social issues, but she also said they're still wary of the party whose leaders include Hillary Clinton.
Okay, there's the story from CNN. Interesting that, well, first of all, I noticed that this is just a little quirk. I noticed that the reporter several times, both in the package and there near the end, referred to evangelicals as evangelists, which is interesting. It's not untrue. I don't think it's untrue. It does make it sound like a bunch of Billy Grahams running around someplace. That's what most people think when they think of evangelists. A few things missing from the story. They did mention the defeat of one gay marriage ban. Was it Arizona that failed to ban gay marriage? I think it was. Well, they failed to mention that five states did pass gay marriage bans. And oddly, even though it is maybe a different subject, again and again, before the election, during the election, now after the election, we hear the report on the evangelical voter, the religious voter, and what is conspicuously absent is the Roman Catholic voter. Now, technically, you wouldn't call them evangelicals. I looked. There's anywhere between 65 and 70 million Roman Catholics in America. They vote, too. And I think maybe the shift in the Roman Catholic voter is the thing that people are missing. It may account for the difference in the religious voter as much as any supposed move to the middle of the evangelical voter. I don't know. I might be wrong. It's my suspicion. What do you think? We'll take your thoughts and your comments, your questions during Audio Open Lines as we come to you live this Thursday, the 16th of November, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll take a break, and I want your thoughts on the midterm elections. You've had a week to think about it. What do you think it was really all about, especially with regard to the religious voter? Is their influence on the wane? Are they shifting the direction of their influence? Is the media making too much of it? Is this just the way things go in a midterm election? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. One of the adjectives he used at the beginning of his story there was demoralized. Do you feel demoralized by the midterm elections? Disappointed? Perhaps you're pleased. Are you ready to give up on the Republican Party? I'm not yet, but I'll be quite honest with you. Driving in this morning, I was listening to some talk radio, and I thought to myself, if I didn't know better, I'd switch out right now. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address. We'll get to your phone calls and your email on the other side of this break. It's issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, we will hear a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly roundtable discussion reflecting on the midterm elections and the influence of the religious voter. And then, coming up in the third hour, we want you to choose your favorite Issues Etc. open theme. I'll tell you what that's about a little bit later.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Carl Fakencher on the Center of Seminary Life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Certainly, we would begin by expressing our strong commitment to the Scriptures and the Lutheran Confessions. Everything that we do here is gathered around God's Word, whether that is a matter of our daily worship in the chapel or the prayer life that is a part of our activity together. The classes themselves are always focused on proclaiming Christ as well. I think another very important aspect of our seminary that makes us unique is the relationship between the faculty and the students. And of course, always it's based on our shared faith in Christ Jesus.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or to schedule an on-campus visit, call 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. When the new Democratic-controlled House of Representatives convenes in January, there will be 44 Blue Dog Democrats among the majority. Blue Dogs are traditionally fiscally and socially conservative, and their presence in the House could help defeated Republicans pass important pro-family legislation. But will they be able to vote against their party's platform on abortion, gay marriage, and activist judges? Kim Troby has the story.
The story goes that Blue Dogs came into existence after the 1994 elections because they were so against the direction their party was headed, they started to choke and turn blue. Representative Jim Matheson from Utah is one of the leaders of the group.
I characterize Blue Dogs as true Democrats, but they're willing to work in a bipartisan way, and they're willing to look for solutions. They always have been.
Those solutions could include pro-family conservative legislation if the group remains true to their principles.
There's no question that Blue Dogs will reach out across the aisle. Blue Dogs have always acted in a bipartisan way.
Focus on the Family Action's federal analyst, Amanda Banks, says the mood among Republican leadership right now is optimistic.
I think the Republicans are hopeful that they can solicit their support on these values and also on some economic issues where certain Democrats hold a different view from their party leadership.
She likens the situation to the new kid in school choosing which crowd they will run with.
So it's going to come down, I think, to the will and the conviction of those Democrat members who, in many cases, represent a more conservative constituency. Are they going to defy their leadership or are they going to defy their constituency?
Only time will tell whether the Blue Dogs serving in the 110th Congress will have the fortitude to buck the party in favor of their principles. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
Many fear Blue Dogs that want to move up the Democratic ladder may vote party line. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
My mother was watching from across the courtyard, and my dad was standing in front of me. At the same moment, God spoke to them and said, "That's the one for you."
Do you believe God has a special plan in his heart for the orphan child? Tune in to the next Focus on the Family broadcast as Mrs. Stephanie Fast shares her emotional story of his handiwork in her life. That's on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
You can read an excerpt of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, titled The Great Jesus Debates, on our website, issuesetc.org. It's a book about the battle in the early church over the person and work of Jesus Christ. The Great Jesus Debates is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. The Great Jesus Debates. Costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. That title again, The Great Jesus Debates.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Your phone calls and your email on the post-election analysis. What's your post-election analysis? Coming to you live this Thursday, November the 16th, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Ben is calling from his car. Ben, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi. I just want to say I was pretty discouraged about the elections, and kind of my discouragement kind of went around the issue of life. With abortion and with, stem cell research. I was pretty discouraged because my analysis is that in 2004, the religious right really came out because of the issue of gay marriage. And I felt they really didn't come out as strong, and there's a lot of apathy there amongst what I consider the religious right or the base of the Republican Party to just kind of let this one go or to not be as involved, as if those issues aren't as important this election as they were the previous one and every election.
So you're more disappointed in what you perceive to be the failure of the religious right to step up to the plate on an issue like in the case of Amendment 2 in Missouri.
Exactly, yeah. And the election in general, just letting the party, although, you know, they mentioned at the break the blue dots in the Democratic Party, and that's great. I would like to see that more, but you're letting the party of death, so to speak, win because we're disgruntled with other things, perhaps, or even with the war, or, you know, regardless of something that's not even that political or, you know, necessarily, but being disgruntled with things in general or being apathetic because of the way things are going in the war or whatever, letting that issue go.
All right, Ben, thank you very much. No, Ben's concern here really is, look, if life is on the line, in the case of Missouri Amendment 2, life is on the line, if you are a pro-life voter, you have to consider, you have to balance life against the other issues that may have you a little more disgruntled. Let's talk to Fred in Crystal City, Missouri. That's the home of former presidential candidate Bill Bradley. Fred, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is that I figured right after the elections, when the Republicans got into power, that they were going to use the Christian right to get elected when all the polls were saying that all the conservative Christians were voting for Republican voters, Republican candidates. And it looks like they've been right. They've got a list of things that they want to do, the Republicans have, and those things that the Christians want are way down at the bottom. That's all I had to say.
All right, Fred, thank you very much. I heard somebody else say this, that I think he meant the Democrats using evangelicals to get elected, and now all those things go to the bottom of the list. I don't know if that's true or not, because I haven't seen anybody's agenda. I do know that I was thinking about this again while driving in. We talked with, is it from Democrats for Life? Just refresh me, Jeff, please. Kristen Day. So Kristen Day was on right before the elections, or right after the elections. And she was, I'll be honest, I've talked to Kristen many times. She was really happy. She was giddy. I think it's fair to say that Kristen was giddy the day we talked to her after the elections last week. She was very happy. She was happy because there had been a number of pro-life Democrats elected in this Democrat sweep of the House. So I asked her the question, do you expect the platform of the Democratic Party to reflect this sometime soon? And she said, yes, which kind of surprised me. It might have been her giddiness talking. We will see in 2008 when the new platform for the party is put together by the convention, the Democratic National Convention, whether or not it reflects something more friendly to the pro-life position. Otherwise, we might conclude, and I think fairly conclude, that this was more an election strategy than an indication of any change in the Democratic Party's platform or thinking, at least on the issue of life. It really has to be reflected in your official policies, doesn't it? Otherwise, it's just more or less an election strategy, which they pulled off brilliantly. Kurt calls from Edwardsville. Hi, Kurt.
Pastor Todd.
Hello.
I've been a pretty consistent, loyal listener, but for the past 6 or 7 months, I've been running for office in Madison County.
Oh, no kidding.
I ran for a Madison County treasurer and got beat. And we had some very good candidates in Madison County. We had three pro-life judges and myself, who was running for treasurer. The pro-life issue is really not too involved in the treasurer's office. But we had four really good candidates running in a traditionally Democrat county, and we're kind of wondering why we got beat. Well, one reason is because at the national, I think people were coming out to vote against the national Republicans.
Right, it was a nationalized election, yeah.
And so we felt that we were good candidates at the local level, but you know what we find out is that not everyone is. When people are talking about politics, even today when you're talking about politics, you're talking about the national level. And I think that we had some really good candidates at the local level, but we were punished for the sins of the Republicans at the national level, I do believe, and at the state level.
So do you plan to run again, Kurt?
Well, now, you've asked me the question that all these other reporters have asked. I really don't know at this point, but certainly I'm a lot more experienced, and I have to talk to my wife before I do anything like this before.
Let me ask you one other question before I let you go. Running for county treasurer, did you say?
Yes.
It's a local office.
Yes.
You sit there as a, I don't know what you do for a living, you sit there, you listen to the radio, you do these kind of things. Why did you finally decide to run for public office?
Well, we ran on a platform of ethics and a concern for taxes, and I think they work together because I think that some of the ethical issues result in greater monies being spent, and it was a good issue. We ran a clean campaign. I did not attack my opponent in a personal way, although I was attacked for being too Christian, actually.
But do you just wake up one morning and say, I think I'll run for county treasurer?
Well, it's resulted from just a general interest in I do believe that as Christians, we should be active in the public square, and I don't believe God has called me to be as a pastor or anything like that. But I do have a real interest in civil government, and also I have a CPA, so I have an accounting background.
So you're qualified to do the job.
Sure.
All right, Kurt, thank you very much for the call.
Very good.
Sorry about the loss there. Well, I don't know. It's always Tip O'Neill says all politics is local. And that is taken as ironclad truth. But I think a better phrase is all politics is local unless it isn't. Because I think Kurt is right in his sense. I don't know why he lost personally, but in his sense that when people go out to vote, even if they're going to vote for local candidates, sometimes they pull the lever or punch the card or whatever they do for reasons having nothing to do with their local situation. You had something you wanted to say?
Well, you know, I live in Madison County, and I voted for Kurt. And that's probably going to cost him if he runs next time around if he gets my endorsement. But, you know,
weren't you at some fundraiser for a bunch of liberal judges in that?
Yeah, that's a long story. Right. We don't have time to talk about
you
that.
You were there for the free
food. I didn't donate money. I just ate their food and drank their wine.
Okay.
You know, you talk about all politics is local. I remember I was in high school. I went around. I told you the story.
Yeah, you used to be an activist, didn't you?
No.
Yes,
I was
you did.
Never an activist. And I'm not a party loyalist at all. I've never voted straight ticket.
Right.
But anyway, because I think man is sinful. I think divided government is good because we're by nature not very good people.
Okay, I agree.
So anyway, I went around and had this. Madison County had never had a Republican elected a county office since like FDR. So Reagan was running in 80, and we had a guy running from judge named Don Weber. And he geniusly had his picture taken with Ronald Reagan. And I just handed these things out. And everybody, that was the smartest thing you could do.
Did he get elected?
The first Republican elected in Madison County. So all politics is local isn't necessarily
right.
True.
So the guy's campaign essentially came down to
shaking Ronald Reagan's hand.
Shaking Ronald Reagan's hand and get someone just to click the shutter at the right moment.
Right.
Anyone who's thinking about running for public office, think about that. There are people who actually make it, they're Forrest Gumps, they make it their life's ambition to have their pictures snapped with all the right people. And see, if you get enough of them done with enough of different people, one of them's going to come in handy sooner or later. Really, I mean, you could have your picture snapped with Jimmy Carter. You might want to just keep that one on the wall. When you get your picture snapped with Ronald Reagan, it might get you elected. Who knows? The trick is getting your picture snapped with the right person. Pastor Matt Harrison, I think in his office, we just talked with him a few minutes ago. I've been over to his palatial office down on Kirkwood Road, and I've seen, actually, it's not a palatial office. My office is bigger. He has a better view. But I've seen the picture of him with George W. Bush. I think there's more than one, in fact. That might come in handy in the future, too. We'll see. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
I just didn't get my picture taken with Matt Harrison.
Well, I think I have one of those. Actually, I was looking through the back of my date book. Just since you mentioned pictures, you got to see this one.
Hair or no hair?
Well, the hair's coming back, I guess. But you tell me whether these will hold me in good stead someday in the future. Can you see this from a distance there, who my picture is with?
Pastor Whedon, Pastor Herb Miller.
That's
Pastor,
right.
St. Paul Lutheran Church.
But I'm not talking about Herb Miller. He's just the district president.
Yeah.
Will Whedon. We're practically arm in arm in this picture. Here's another one. That's just me.
He's pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel. Yeah.
Here we are, we're even closer. Can you see the chemistry that's at work there?
You know, you look like 10 years older than both Whedon and Pastor Herb Miller, president of the Southern Illinois District.
It's true, and Whedon's got 10 years on me. I do not know how. I do not know how this
it's
works
that
out.
It's that Atkins diet he's on all the time.
It must be. He's gone from, like, vegetarianism to Atkins to all these things, and yet he remains youthful. All I have to do is I cut off my hair 10 years ago, let it grow back, and it's gray. I look like a grandpa, for heaven's sakes. I have not, I'll tell you one thing, have not been carded once since I grew my hair back. I am 42 years old. When I used to shave my hair, every time I walked into the grocery store, these people know me. They see me with my kids. Can we see your ID, please? Every single time. Sometimes I'm not even trying to buy alcohol. They just want my ID. It's Audio Open Lines. We'll stay with election, post-election analysis here for a while. PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly put together a panel of, I think, some pretty decent minds to look at the influence of the religious voter on the midterm elections and to just do a little post-game analysis. What in the world did it all mean? Why did it happen the way it happened? What were the evangelical voters saying? That's the big question, isn't it? What were the evangelical voters trying to say? Here's the story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. It's a little long, but we'll break in occasionally for your questions, your comments, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Now, election analysis and comment from three close observers of religion and politics. John Green is a fellow at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life and a political scientist at the University of Akron. Michael Cromarty is vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington. E.J. Dion is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a columnist for the Washington Post. Welcome to you all. E.J., give us a headline. What happened?
Iraq overwhelmed all other issues in the campaign, and if there was a central moral issue, it was almost certainly corruption.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Yes, I agree with E.J. One of the issues was corruption. One of the things I was most surprised about, though, Bob, was how many Republicans didn't vote Republican. They got the vote out, but when they got to the poll, they were pretty upset with the GOP.
Mm-hmm. And John, how did we vote?
Well, let's talk about the
especially the religious communities.
Yeah, let's talk about the major religious communities and what they did. One interesting thing was the Democrats got a majority of the Catholic vote, which hasn't happened for a while in national elections. There's a lot of concern about the religious right, how evangelicals would vote, and they actually turned out in fairly large numbers and voted pretty solidly Republican, about 70%. Democrats made a few gains there, but still stayed pretty Republican. The non-affiliated people, a very special kind of religious group, the non-religious, turned out in large numbers, and they voted more Democratic than they usually do. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other groups voted pretty much the way they have typically, Jews Democratic, Black Protestants Democratic, a little bit of drift towards the Democrats among other white Protestants, mainline Protestants and so forth. So the usual pattern, but with some gains on the Democratic side.
Now, do you notice what he said there? This is a guy from the Pew Forum on religion in the media, and these are the guys who crunch the numbers. And he pointed out something that, as I said before, has been conspicuously absent from a lot of the coverage of the religious voter, and that is part of the reason the Democrats won, he says it's a major factor, is that they got the majority of the Catholic vote. Everybody's got their eyes on the evangelical vote. They're all worried about the kind of the Ted Haggard voter, the Pat Robertson voter. What they fail to realize and what they're distracted from is this huge block of voters that have been pretty rock-solid Democratic voters and are, during the Reagan years, swung kind of over to the Republican Party and for various other reasons swung to the Republican Party and now in this election came back. You cannot discount the Catholic voters. You can't. I wonder what they're thinking. I'm not a Roman Catholic, but I wonder what they're thinking when they hear all this news coverage of the evangelical voter as though he were the only religious voter around.
You know, you and I have been talking before and after the election. The media make too big a deal about evangelical voters. Evangelicals have been voting with the Republican Party in large numbers since Ronald Reagan and Jerry Falwell in 1980. The swing voters are the Catholic voters. They're the swing voters.
They're the ones who go back and forth. And I think that goes hand in hand. Thanks. I think that goes hand in hand with something that was pointed out by the other panelists, and that is there was a lot of voting across lines. People registered as Republicans, got out to the polls, and then they voted across the line. Now, if you live in Illinois like I do, you have to, if you're going to cast a vote for every position, which is kind of my principle. You cast a vote for every position. You end up voting for people because in Illinois, there are an awful lot of Democrats running unopposed. Matthew calls from South St. Louis, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Pastor Todd.
Hello.
I think you're right about the Catholic vote being the swing vote, but I think that the evangelicals maybe didn't turn out as much as they did in 2004 because they felt betrayed. And another factor, I think the South traditionally was Democrat, But because of the radically leftist aspect of the Democratic Party, temporarily will vote Republican when they see it as an important issue. But I think they may be easily turned off in the South. That's one perspective I have.
All right, Matt, I got a question about the first point that you made there. You said your perception was that the evangelical voters might not have turned out in numbers as they had in the past because they're disgruntled or they're disappointed. Do you personally know any evangelical friends in Missouri that didn't vote, that said, I'm staying home, I'm not going to vote, they made me mad?
Well, I did go to the polls, and I guess you put me in the evangelical category.
I don't know if I would, but I guess I'm asking you know of people who did that.
I am in the evangelical category, but the only reason I did not vote for Talent, I would never vote for a Democrat because their statement or faith or platform, if you will, is something inherently I can't vote for.
But you didn't vote for Jim Talent.
I did not. I went to the polls. I didn't vote for a single Republican. I did vote on the issues. I did vote against Amendment Number 2.
Good.
That was the reason I showed up at the polls. But the Republicans, they've been spending like crazy. So I don't see them as fiscally conservative at all. So I think they need a message. I'm glad, in one sense, I'm glad they lost. Maybe in the next election, they'll say, "Gee, we just lost a bunch of our voters because we say one thing and we do another. Next time we get a little bit of power, we better use it more wisely."
Okay. Now, one other question before I let you go.
Okay.
Let's use the example of not voting for Jim Talent. How do you work that out in your mind, even though you didn't vote for Claire McCaskill? How do you work it out in your mind that a vote against, a conscious decision not to vote for Jim Talent isn't, in effect, robbing him of a majority he could have had over Claire McCaskill? The Democratic candidate was pro-life, let's say. Would you vote for a pro-life Democrat?
Well, there's several reasons why I couldn't vote for Talent, and I'm quite sure he's a very nice guy.
I'm not so much interested in the reasons. What I'm interested in is,
I'll tell you why I didn't, though. I mean, well, I think it's an answer to your question. Jim Talent, for example, has exceptions on his abortion stance. If he had been no exceptions on abortion, then I would have voted for him. But since I feel like he's compromised, he's not pro-life without exception, I see that really as pro-choice with exception.
Okay, one other question. Would you vote for a pro-life Democrat if you had one sitting there on the ballot in front of you, Matthew?
No, I wouldn't, because I still think that I think socialism is a violation of the Eighth Commandment, and I see redistribution of wealth as another ethical issue for me. I can't vote for somebody who's part of their platform is they want to rob the rich and give to the poor, so to speak.
So if you have the choice between a Republican candidate who is pro-choice, a Democratic candidate who is pro-life, what would you do? No vote?
I would do no vote on the basis of, for example, Deuteronomy 1, the qualifications of a civil magistrate, neither one of them are qualified. I feel like my vote is an endorsement as a Christian, and I can't use my vote for that. So I will vote for neither one.
All right, Matt, thanks for staying on the line with me, and thanks for the call. Let's talk with Richard, who calls from his car. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just feel that the Republicans let the Democrats run roughshod over them in the Senate, and they didn't change the filibuster rule, and they just didn't follow through what they said they would do, and so the conservatives stayed home.
So were you among those, or did you know people among those who stayed home with those kind of concerns, Richard?
No, not in my locality. I didn't communicate with anybody like that, but just looking at over the national, I would just say the conservatives stayed away, and that's why they lost.
Richard, thank you very much. You know, there are those before the midterm elections who said, if you're going to register a protest by not voting, this is the time to do it at the midterm elections. It's the safest time to register a protest by not voting. And apparently, at least some of our listeners took that advice. However, I'm not sure that it happened nationally. John Green, who's the political analyst from the University of Akron and a senior fellow at the Religion and American Politics Pew Forum, who we heard and are going to hear a little bit more if time permits from this PBS Religion Ethics News Weekly piece, said that there was a lot of concern about the religious right, but how the evangelicals would vote, but they did actually turn out in fairly large numbers. Now, it's hard for me to believe that a few evangelicals staying home made all that difference. A lot of them staying home would make a difference. Let's get a few more minutes of this story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, a roundtable of analysts on the election.
Did you all see any pattern in the ballot measures and how the ballot measures in various states came out, EJ?
Well, I think you saw gay marriage once again, measures against gay marriage pass, but I thought it was interesting that the margin was relatively narrow in some places, and one of them actually went down in Arizona, which I think is surprising. The defeat of the abortion bill in the bill banning abortion in South Dakota, I think is very important. Clearly that bill was drawn too broadly, and I think it's very significant that the pro-choice movement, instead of taking that to court, went to the voters instead and asked the voters for their opinion. And I think that's important for the long haul because I think a lot of the resentment among conservatives against Roe v. Wade comes from the fact that it was imposed by the courts. This time, the pro-choice movement made their case to the people and won.
Michael, what does the takeover in both the House and the Senate say about the present and future power and influence in Washington politics of the religious right?
Well, one thing that Republicans should not take from this is that they think that the moral value voters have abandoned them totally. In fact, the matter, as EJ just mentioned, 7 out of 8 amendments for traditional marriage passed. Now, the moral value voters did vote Republican. The ones that didn't, however, were disgusted not so much with President Bush, but with Congress. I am surprised, Bob, a week or two going into before the election, how many conservatives I met that said, if we lose, we deserve it. Mm-hmm. And then post the election, how many have said, we got what we deserved. You don't hear people saying we were robbed, there were bad ballots, there was bad voting behavior. No, they said, we got what we deserved. I think that's very interesting.
But what about the power of the organized, the political power of the leaders of the religious right? Is that still what it used to be?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think John Green can confirm with us what the data is. But the fact of the matter is, they got out to vote, and they're concerned about the future Supreme Court, and they're concerned about moral and social conservative issues. But it wasn't enough to carry this election.
But, you know, having said that, there are some real disappointments in the election returns for religious conservatives. Some of their real champions in Congress, people like Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, and Congressman Jim Ryan from Kansas, were defeated. So some of their champions won't be there in the new Congress.
We'll pick this up on the other side of the break, and we'll play the rest of it for you, as promised. And then a little bit later, we want you to choose your favorite Issues, Etc. open theme. Not the music that we normally play. We're just asking you to look at something we've been toying around with and tell us what you think of it. And that'll come up a little bit later in the program today. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I got a thought on Rick Santorum when we come back. He went down to a stunning defeat. He lost in a landslide. He was one of the strongest senators, at least vocally strongest senators, and a pretty strong candidate to boot. And yet, in Pennsylvania, he did not re-win that seat. He lost it big. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The niche specialty of LCMS World Relief, along with disasters getting 95, at least 95% of the dollar given to aid victims, we are determined that that aid be very closely connected with local Christians, local congregations, so the connection between Christ and caring for people is one that remains together. That's who Christ was. He loved people, word and deed. That's what the church does, I'm convinced, on the basis of the New Testament.
That's Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief. For more information, look for the LCMS World Relief logo on our website, issuesetc.org, or call 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief.